Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
With new figures released this afternoon, the spotlight is once again on our homelessness crisis. In June, 12,600 people were in emergency accommodation, including 1,804 families, a new record. As the housing crisis deepens and the number of homeless people increases once again, we're joined by Chief Executive of DePaul, David Carroll, to get some reaction. David, you're welcome to the programme. Not welcome news, perhaps not unsurprising news nonetheless. What do you make of the figures published today?
Sarah, sometimes you run out of superlatives, you know, with regards to the figures going up on a month-by-month basis in this way. But what we can't forget is the ultimate, you know, the misery that people are facing, both those people who are at risk of homelessness, maybe waiting on an eviction notice, or those people in temporary accommodation, and let's think specifically and around, you know, the amount of children really that are in temporary accommodation going into this weekend. I think from our perspective, you know, there needs to be kind of further action that's taken in Budget 24 in order to be able to really, really throw the kitchen sink at this issue now. We've got a really, I think, important opportunity. And we're looking for real substantial action going into the budget.
All right, so you're calling for an emergency housing budget in Budget 2024. What sort of outlay are you looking for, and what do you need to see done?
I think in the short term, clearly the private rented sector is in free fall. You know, we have a very small amount of properties that are available within HAP levels for people within temporary accommodation, specific support for those renters in terms of tax relief, but also as well for small and incidental landlords. Let's work out now in the next couple of weeks what that means from a quantifiable basis, work out the figures, and government come up with an early perspective on this. The second piece is that, the figures are interesting in terms of the amount of family breakdown that's occurring, and I suppose that tells a story with sometimes issues around mental health, drugs and alcohol, underlying that family separation and reasons for family separation. So a big injection in HSC social inclusion funding is really important in order to be able to support those people with massive complexities. We're certainly seeing far more incidences of drugs and alcohol within our projects, and we need support with regard to that. On a medium to longer term basis, we absolutely need to take advantage of the windfall tax income that we have and increase our social housing targets. And we're calling for that to be increased from the current figure of 9,000 to 12,000. That's not going to help us in the short term, but certainly we need to be able to take the opportunity, this once-in-a generation opportunity, in order to be able to tackle the structural issues that we have in terms of housing supply.
And that increase that you're seeing in drug and alcohol use among people in emergency accommodation, do you have any idea what's driving that?
You know what? If you look at what the absolute kind of awful experience of being kind of in temporary accommodation, you may have had a problem already before you've been in temporary accommodation, but you know, all of the research shows that the longer you spend in temporary accommodation, the greater your difficulties come, even although, you know, we're putting in a massive amount of intervention and our staff are working night and day for that to occur. You know, over half of the people, and we're providing 630 beds, temporary accommodation, have been in temporary accommodation for over 6 months. So you know, this is around getting people out. You know,
just to be clear then, David, you feel that the experience of being long-term in emergency accommodation for many people who maybe never would have found themselves there before, that experience is driving them to drug and alcohol abuse?
We put in so many interventions in terms of helping people, but, you know, the absolute trauma and filling your day and the depression that comes on the back of that. You know, I was speaking to people, a number of service users this week, and the absolute frustration that's coming from people who are looking for hope, and particularly single people as well, because single people are staying in the system longer. We need to find a solution as well for how do we bring on the housing supply for single people as well, Sarah.
I just want to go back to your proposal for help for the private rented sector and for small landlords, because I know there's a difference of opinion on this among both political parties and I think among NGOs as well, with some sort of suggesting that really it's time to give up on the private rental sector, that it's time to put all the focus and all the money into building housing.
Do you know what? The Paul have never demonised the private rental sector. They've very often come up with solutions for people with the greatest complex needs. So, you know, we've got a very good relationship with lots and lots of landlords. I mean, the example of that is that we moved 1,000 people from direct provision into their own accommodation. The vast majority of that over the last 3 years, the vast majority of that was in the private rental sector. It's needed. It's part of the system and needs to be supported in some way until we can bring the supply in the social housing spectrum. And that's why our big focus is on how do we get those numbers up within the social housing section. You know, looking at the figures, the quarterly figures, we've had 200 families in quarter two, 207 families moving on from emergency accommodation. That's just not enough, Sarah. You know, we need to absolutely provide the accommodation in order to get those figures up, in order to get people out of temporary accommodation.
So we're looking forward now to the winter. It's hard to think that we're talking about the winter already, but it'll be upon us before we know it. And we were speaking to Minister Dara O'Brien on the programme a couple of weeks ago, and he confirmed that he will not be reintroducing the winter eviction ban, really, no matter what. So I suppose I'm wondering, how do you expect to cope in the winter? Would you be concerned about that decision, or do you understand it, or what do you do in the absence of an eviction ban?
Well, look, we can scream and shout around an eviction ban. Look, it looks politically clear that it's not going to be reintroduced, so we have to work with what situation that we're in. We're involved ourselves in the tenant in situ scheme from the Paul Housing's point of view. It's vital, and I would say to those landlords out there who are involved in it, stay with it. It's vital that continues, because if that didn't, we'd been in a far worse situation. I think we need to look at those completions. There was good news this week in terms of the completions of housing, but the Paul's big focus is, are they coming towards the people who need them the most? And so the scheme that government introduced around leasing, I'd be very, very interested to see those completions that are coming on board go into that leasing scheme in the best possible way in order to be able to alleviate and get those people longest in temporary accommodation out in order to be able to create room within the temporary accommodation system. Because we really, really, you know, we can't afford to go much more above the amount of people that we have currently in the system.
Okay, and just very finally, David, on that point, because I've seen some other charities talk about something similar to that, that effectively the long-term homeless would jump the queue, for want of a better phrase, on the social housing system to get an offer of housing first when those houses come on board. That's what you're saying?
I wouldn't. There is no way that we're asking people to jump the queue. We need to look at the huge detrimental longer-term effects that being in temporary accommodation, particularly for children, will cause. And this is not jumping the queue. This is around alleviating and preventing longer term difficulties. Let's
I absolutely understand.
Who needed the most, you know?
Yeah, and I absolutely understand the imperative to do that. I'm just wondering, is there not a potential problem that those people who aren't homeless, who are maybe living with families and aren't officially homeless, say, but are in very difficult situations, would almost have an incentive then to become homeless in order to get up the queue on social housing lists? You know, does it cause problems like that?
Yeah. Sarah, in my long history in working in homelessness, I have met very few people who put themselves deliberately into temporary accommodation in order to get housing.
Okay.
And I would want to dispel that, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's David Carroll, Chief Executive of DePaul. Joining us now is the Chief Executive of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, Pat Davitt, and Sinn Féin TD and Spokesperson for Housing, Eoin O'Brien. And you're both very welcome to the programme this evening. Before we discuss those homeless figures, I might just ask briefly for your reactions to last night's RT Investigates Sex for Rent programme. Pat Davitt, what did you make of it?
I pitied you having to present it, Sarah, being quite honest about it, because it was some terrible programme. These people, they shouldn't be called landlords, because they're not landlords. They're property owners preying on other people. That's simply what they are. So I wouldn't like to think that they'd be called landlords. It's terrible, and it's probably more terrible to think that there's not a law to stop it. That's really what I feel about it.
We have no evidence that they're not landlords. What we do know is that some of them were advertising rooms for rent on websites, and some of them were offering them for a very good price. And then after that, obviously, the coercion and exploitation attempts ensued. But that's not to say they're not landlords, Pat.
Well, it's not to say that they're not landlords in other fields, but like for what they were talking about last night, they're not landlords. They're giving their room and their property to somebody and taking advantage of them is basically what they're doing. And that's not a landlord. So, like, I don't know what you would call them, but if they are landlords in other occupations that they have and renting properties correctly, like landlords do, well, the well and good, yes, you could call them landlords. But for that particular occupation or what they were doing last night, they're not landlords as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, but you would accept that the report last night would demonstrate the real risks that are facing some female tenants, particularly in Ireland, and the lack of protection for people that are struggling to find accommodation during this housing crisis.
I think, Sarah, you'd have to recognise that. There's no doubt about that. But those risks were always there. Like, you know, it's not just now that those risks have come about. I think they would always have been there, and there's always a possibility that that has been happening.
Okay, well, fair enough. The risks would always have been there, but they have been absolutely intensified by the state of the housing crisis at the moment.
I think that's quite true. That is quite true. But those people are taking advantage of it, and it's not right. And it's a terrible pity that there isn't a law there to stop it, definitely.
Eoin O'Brien, on that point, is it time for legislation? Do we have Eoin? We might try and get Eoin back up on the line, and while we're trying to get Eoin back up on the line, Pat, I might come to you on the homeless figures that we heard about today, 12,600 people homeless. I know when the ban was introduced, the eviction ban, and since it was lifted, homelessness has clearly continued to increase. What do you make of those figures, and was it a mistake to lift the ban, do you think?
I'm afraid it wasn't a mistake to lift the ban. The ban was perfectly right to be lifted. And like, well, the figures are still terrible. Like, again, it's another shame, really, to have 12,600 people, like, an increase of 159. I suppose when you look at it and you break down the figures, you'd have to look to see where the figures are for the notice of terminations. They're 28.8% of what? But how many would there normally be? To me, it doesn't seem like it's huge. So I don't believe that the ban has got very little to do with these figures, being quite honest about it. And I think these figures would have risen regardless of the fact, as we have seen them, when there was a ban, the figures were still rising. We don't know where these figures are going to end on a month or a three-monthly basis. At the moment, I suppose there's no good news in this. And it could be good news in it because, like, really, landlords are at the moment are being forced from the market when homes have never been so scarce. So a lot more could be done, in actual fact, I think, to keep more of the landlords in the market and maybe bring down that 28.8 to what a normal figure is. I don't know what it should be, being quite honest about it, because there's always going to be notice of terminations issued. So I don't know what that figure would be, 28.8%. Maybe it could be something around 14 or 15% or something, but I think it could be brought down.
Well, it certainly needs to be brought down, I think, at this point. We have Eoin O'Brien back on the line, and Eoin, I want to get your response to those homelessness figures. But first, I had asked you about whether or not it's time for legislation, in your view, to try and combat sex for rent.
Well, the time for legislation was a year and a half ago when this scandal was first exposed by Anne Murphy in the Irish Examiner, who did sterling work bringing it to our attention. I want to commend the RT Investigates team for reminding us of what is a disgusting, predatory form of behaviour by what I hope is a very, very small number of landlords. And there is a particular vulnerability for women, and especially women from other countries at present, because rents have never been higher, it's never been harder to get rental properties, and homelessness is rising. When the story first broke over a year and a half ago, I wrote to Dara O'Brien and Helen McEntee, and I urged them to consider making it an offence to seek sex for the provision of rental accommodation and the advertising of such offers, because as you mentioned, advertisements of this do exist in social media. A year and a half on, and there's been no action from government, and therefore it is not government's fault that the kind of appalling predatory behaviour we saw from men and women on RT Investigates programme is happening. Government could have and should have acted a year and a half ago. We need legislation to protect people from this kind of behaviour, and while I understand Helen McEntee is looking at aspects of criminalising or further criminalising the act of sex for rent, we need to go further, and we may need to make it an offence to seek such sex for rent or to advertise such arrangements. It's completely unacceptable.
Mm. All right, well, we'll have to move on, and I want to bring you back to the homeless figures, which is what we invited you both on to discuss today. And one of the things that Pat Devitt said there, Owen, was part of the problem here is the number of private landlords that are being driven from the market. I know you and I have discussed this on the programme a couple of times in the past, but we were also talking to DePaul earlier in the programme, and David from DePaul also echoed that as being a major problem, and he's calling for tax relief for landlords in the budget to try and keep small and landlords in the market to provide accommodation. Is that something you would support?
No, and we have discussed this issue before, and at an earlier period we gave the matter very serious consideration. Our view is it won't work. What it'll do is it'll give a very large number of landlords who aren't leaving the market and who are making significant profit, even more profit, and it'll do very little to stop those landlords who are leaving from leaving, because they're leaving for a range of reasons, as we've discussed before, including high property prices, the return of positive equity, the desire to use the property for themselves or their family members. But it's also important that we don't frame this discussion in the wrong way. Landlords selling the properties isn't the cause of rising homelessness. It's the failure of government over 7 years of landlords leaving the market to adequately respond to that. That's the cause. It is the failure of government to provide an adequate supply of social and affordable housing that is the cause of homelessness. Mm-hmm. And it's always very telling that when we have these discussions that it's Pat and I, and I have the greatest respect for Pat, and we agree on many things. This is a debate about government policy, not about what landlords may or may not do. And until government policy changes, and let's not forget Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government together for 7 years. Until that policy changes and the delivery of social and affordable homes increases and accelerates, then homelessness is going to continue. And how many more months do Pat and I have to come onto your show and talk about another record-breaking, historic high, pensioner homelessness up again, child homelessness perilously close to its highest levels ever, family homelessness and single person homelessness at the highest levels ever? This is the responsibility of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And my clear view at this stage is, because we've given them all of the policy proposals that they need to tackle this crisis, as have the NGO sector, the homelessness sector and academics, this government's time is up. They need to go. And until they do, my fear is this problem will get worse.
We did ask for a representative from government on the programme this evening, but there was no one available. Commenting on those reports, though, published today, the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, said, and I'll quote, "Unfortunately, we've seen an increase in the numbers of people in emergency accommodation. The situation is very challenging, but the government's local authorities and those in our NGO sector are working together and making every effort to reduce homelessness. Tackling this issue is a government priority," he says. I might just bring you back, Pat, to what Owen is saying in relation to landlords leaving the market, because, again, as I mentioned, DePaul has mentioned this as something critical that needs to be addressed in the short term as well. I'm sure you'd be very happy to see some tax relief for small landlords in the budget. But is Owen right when he says that won't stop landlords who are planning on leaving from leaving anyway?
Well, I think it will stop landlords from leaving, and I think more so it's going to, what's more important here is that it's going to encourage landlords to get into the market, and I think tax reliefs are going to do that. And I think, because you're not at the bottom end of the market or the middle of the market or wherever you are, you're not entitled to tax relief. So I think that isn't right. I think landlords are entitled to a break in relation to tax, and they're paying far, far, far too much tax. It's as simple as that. But the proposals that we're talking about at the moment and what we're speaking about to help landlords to stay in the market is correct. It is a temporary measure. And obviously the solution is that we have more and more properties and everything like that. But at the moment, we want to try and do something about it. And the encouragement to keep those landlords in the market is really what we can do. I hear all sorts of talk about what's in the budget or going to be in the budget about tax proposals and everything. But I can tell you that we as an institute haven't been asked about for anything or been discussed. Any of these proposals haven't been discussed with us as to what the story is. And that's completely wrong. I think the government should discuss what they're thinking about with people who are involved in the business like ourselves and property owners like the IPOE, etc., and get into a situation where if they're going to do something, they get the best value for what they're going to do rather than we waking up one day and finding that they've done X, Y, or Z or nothing.
I don't know, Patrick, are you just asking for direct line to government to tell them what sort of tax release you want?
No, I think it's good for government to discuss with people who are involved in the property market as to what they're thinking about and seeing was there a feeling for that sort of that type of relief or not. Like, I don't think that's too much to do, really. Like, we'd like to talk to government about it and we go to different things
would.
That they have on every day of the week. But at the end of the day, like, you know, it's going to be important to make sure if they're going to make tax relief, they're going to do et cetera with it, that they give some sort of knowledge or they do it on some way that they think it's going to be the most beneficial in the marketplace.
You mentioned, though, the crisis of older people who are renting, an 83% increase since the last census. How do we go about solving that or tackling that? Because that's a trend, I imagine, that is only going to get worse.
It is, but it's also a problem that's eminently solvable. There were 181 people over the age of 65 recorded in the figures released today. The government could just decide that homelessness among the over 65s is unacceptable, that there's a certain threshold of decency as a society. We don't allow ourselves to go below and to provide a dedicated stream of good quality housing. And they could use modular building technologies to ensure no person over the age of 65 is in emergency accommodation. And some of these people, by the way, are in their 70s. And I'm even aware of some cases of people in their early 80s.
So give them preferential access to social housing as it is developed. Is that what you're saying?
I would go a step further and say there should be a dedicated stream of high quality modular homes that is funded by the Department of Housing on a year-on-year basis. We discussed this the last time I was on your programme. That is explicitly for and exclusively for people who are in emergency accommodation. And let's start by getting the over 65s out first, then families with children, then everywhere else in between. In Finland, over 5 years.
The NGOs and the charities today are actually all calling for public housing as it's developed to be allocated to people who are in long-term homelessness first.
And my point is to go one step further than that. In Finland, over the space of 5 years, they virtually ended long-term homelessness by having a dedicated stream of accommodation that was being provided in addition to the overall provision of social and affordable homes to ensure that they reduced dramatically the number of people in emergency accommodation. And then as people had crises, they were only in emergency accommodation for very short periods of time. I've been calling for this for quite a number of years. But the idea that our grandparents should be left for a year or for 2 years or more in emergency accommodation is a scandal.
I think it's eminently solvable. You'd find it difficult to find somebody to disagree with you on that. But I suppose if it was as easy as just setting up a stream of modular housing, it would have been done by now, surely.
Well, what's interesting is this week, the first modular accommodation, temporary accommodation for Ukrainians fleeing the war in Russia's war in their country has been brought on stream. Roderick O'Gorman finally has got his 700 units coming on stream, and I welcome that. There is no comparable programme, despite the fact that it was promised by Simon Coveney, then Owen Murphy, Dara O'Brien, no comparable programme within the Department of Housing to have a multi-annual framework agreement to deliver high-quality, permanent homes using that building technology, particularly targeting exits of single people and families with children from emergency accommodation on top of the overall social housing targets. In fact, government still haven't released the information for the first half of this year on where they are with the social and affordable housing delivery. I suspect that's because they're behind target again, as last year and the year before that.
Well,
they missed their targets that are too low
case,
in the first instance.
But of course, if we had a representative from government, they could tell us if that was the case. Unfortunately, I don't have that information with me at the moment. Thank you both very much for joining us this evening. That's Pat Davitt and Onur Brunjic. Let us know what you think to 51551.